From KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Aircheck, a new show about great music from the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jake Brownell, producer at KRCC.
I'm Vicki Greger, music director at KRCC and host of the Morning Music Mix.
And I'm Jeff Beery, program director and host of the Blue Plate Special. On today's show, you're going to be hearing an interview and in-studio performance with the Seattle-based indie pop group Hey Marseille. Also, our very own Dick Fairley, host of the Thursday Night Jazz Excursion, tells us about the history of women in jazz. We remember the life and work of George Martin, a.k.a. the Fifth Beatle, and we review some of our favorite new releases from this last month.
All that today on Aircheck.
So we begin this episode with the music review section of our show. This is the part of the show where we go around the table and talk about a song that's been stuck in our heads for the last month. Last episode we did two songs, but this time we're going to shorten it up a bit and each of us will just share one song. So we'll go around the table, share our songs. You guys know the drill, right? Jeff,
yep.
Vicki?
Got it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Jeff, let's start with you.
My turn. Well, we got in. Vicki handed me this CD month or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's a compilation CD. It's out on Alligator Records, a Chicago-based blues label. And it's this beautifully packaged compilation tribute album to Blind Willie Johnson. An incredible selection of artists on here reinterpreting Blind Willie Johnson's music. And the song we're going to listen to is a song that Lucinda Williams remade. And this one is It's Nobody's Fault But Mine. I've always been a fan of Lucinda Williams. The first CD that I ever got from her here at KRCC when I was the music director was an acoustic disc called Ramblin', where she interprets a bunch of old classic blues tunes. And she's doing that again on this tribute album to Blind Willie Johnson. And she has lent her very distinctive voice to this. And her guitar playing, and I think it adds new life to a classic American blues song.
All right, let's take a listen to it. This is It's Nobody's Fault But Mine, and it's a Blind Willie Johnson song, but interpreted by Lucinda Williams.
My soul be lost, ain't nobody's fault but mine. Well, Father taught me how to read. Father taught me how to read. If I don't read, my soul be lost, ain't nobody's fault but mine. Well, nobody's fault but mine. Nobody's fault but mine. If I don't read, my soul be lost, ain't nobody's fault but mine.
Man, the hair standing straight up on my arm, Jeff. What a great selection.
You know, it's too bad that Blind Willie passed away because he wrote some incredible blues songs that have been covered again and again and again. And Blind Willie, from what I gather, lived a really hard life. Poor his whole life, blind at a very young age, died from malaria in 1945. Just hard. Poor. House burned down, had to live in his burned down house because he had no place to go. Wouldn't it be nice if he could catch the royalties off of this stuff? You know? Really,
yeah.
Really. And I think Lucinda Williams, her voice is so distinctive. So distinctive.
You know, it's that Lucinda Williams voice, and as she gets older and that deepening and of course just life showing in her voice. Her voice is truly a blues instrument.
It's an acquired taste, you know. I mean, I've talked to some people who just do not like Lucinda Williams' vocal intonations, but I love it. I think she's American to the bone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're next, Jake. You're next on the roster.
The pressure is on. All right, so for my pick, I am going to choose a song by Kendrick Lamar, the hip-hop artist from L.A., Compton. And Kendrick Lamar is kind of on top of the hip-hop world right now. He had an incredible album that came out in 2015 called To Pimp a Butterfly. He won several Grammys for that album, and it was called almost universally by critics across the musical spectrum one of the best albums of 2015. And so while Kendrick Lamar was recording To Pimp a Butterfly, he recorded a lot of other tracks that for one reason or another didn't make it onto the final album, but which he still liked and which he continued to perform on various occasions. And so he played the Jimmy Fallon show in January, and he played one of these songs, one of these unreleased songs. And then again, at the Grammys, he had this incredible performance. And so rumors started to swirl. People started to ask, where are these songs coming from? And of all people, LeBron James, the basketball player, started to kind of harass Kendrick Lamar on Twitter, saying, hey, you know, where's this music coming from and when can we hear it? And in response to that, at the beginning of March, Kendrick Lamar, out of nowhere, dropped this new album called Untitled Unmastered, which features B-sides, outtakes, an array of songs from those To Pimp a Butterfly sessions. And they are so good and not at all what you would expect from an album comprised of outtakes and things that didn't make the cut originally. So the song that I want to play is off of that album, and this song is called Untitled 2. June 23rd, 2014.
Get up on the phone, tell the squad come on. We go ball again, before he call us home. World is going crazy, where did we go wrong? It's a tidal wave, it's a thunderdome. Get God on the phone, I just got a raise.
I just got a raise.
Spent it all on
I
me.
Spent it all on me.
Diamonds all of praise.
Diamonds all of praise.
And I'm bossing up.
And I'm bossing up.
Get out the way.
Get out the way.
I'm the only way we can fornicate. Pimping and posing. Look what I drove in.
This, I think, picks up where he left off in a lot of ways with To Pimp a Butterfly. That the saxophone, the bass, that sort of free jazz sound. He's just, I think, pushing the boundaries of rap in a way that is really, really cool.
Picking up on this, there's something incredibly psychedelic about song.
Very dreamy.
Yeah, and to your point about the sort of dreaminess of it, he's also kind of, the lyrics he's saying, get God on the phone, said it won't be long, you know, and he's describing all these things that he's seeing. It's like he's in a sort of fever dream in some way, and I think what he's describing is a life of, you know, wealth and fame, and which was a big theme in To Pimp a Butterfly, was sort of him trying to come to terms with what it means to be a celebrity, what it means to be a rap icon.
I think it's cool that he just pulled these things off the shelf because LeBron James told him he needed to hear some music.
That's true. Yeah, when he released it, it was like there was a caption on social media that said you can thank
LeBron.
King James, which is LeBron's
right.
Twitter handle. So
thumbs way up on that one.
Act of violence, yeah, we juggling like that. I did a lot of dumb shit in my past. Lord forgive me, hoping I don't relapse. Dave just bought a new 911. Almost thought I seen another plane crash. Q just bought a brand new McLaren.
All right, well, Vicky, your turn.
Well, this was easy because this is an artist that I've appreciated and listened to for many, many years. And just makes one amazing record after another. Here we go again. And this is PJ Harvey. The song is The Wheel, and it's from the forthcoming The Hope Six Demolition Project. And that's an interesting project because she and the musicians recorded open to the public out, you know, behind glass, part of a London Museum exhibition last year, where you could actually then observe the process of them recording these songs. songs, and that's coming out in April, but they're releasing singles slowly but surely, and this was the first one they released, and it comments really on the loss of, you know, it's a sad subject. It's talking about the loss of 28,000 children, and it's referencing it, taking into consideration the losses in Kosovo and Afghanistan and gun crime, and that's what you'll hear in the chorus and in the outro. What's interesting about this song, bringing it together, is it has this insanely amazing David Bowie-ish sax line. And it might even be PJ playing saxophone, because she plays bass and guitar, piano, saxophone. She's so talented. And it's got a almost like a hand clap kind of staccato rhythm, and they marry it all together with these amazing lyrics. And I'll tell you, it's a hard song to get out of your head. I think about it daily.
Well, let's take a listen.
I want to hear it.
Yeah, the song is The Wheel, and it's PJ Harvey.
Damn, we got some suffering going on here.
The times we're living in, the conflicts that just seem to be like coming at us faster than we can absorb, some of our most important musicians are really deeply taking a look and commenting on what they're seeing around them.
Good.
I know. I personally need that. That's how I process most of any kind of news is first through music.
Mm-hmm. I think she is as perfect as anybody to take on a subject like this. You know, she's traveled in this terrain in the past.
Yes, always a keen observer of emotional displacement, love lost, love found. Conflict in any shape.
I like the way people are sort of joining in on this. With it's like a chorus of people here at the end, sort of in protest to this. I think it's really cool the way it builds in that way.
And then this great outro, she's just watch them fade out, watch them fade out.
So that's our music review segment. Some interesting songs here, some food for thought as well. Thanks for taking the time to do this.
Thanks, Jake.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Jake.
You're listening to Air Check from KRCC. I'm Jake Brownell.
I'm Vicki Greger.
I'm Jeff Beery.
So, Vicki, this month, George Martin, also sometimes referred to as the Fifth Beatle, passed away. And so we wanted to talk a little bit about his legacy and why he's known as the Fifth Beatle, what his contribution was to the Beatles' music and to music more generally. So thanks for doing this. I know you've done your homework on George Martin.
Yeah, and that's somebody that I really have grown up with. You always heard about George Martin, and certainly in connection with the Beatles. So, yes, he died early in March, and this is a guy that had almost six decades of active work and participation in music as a record producer, a conductor, a composer, an arranger. He was an audio engineer, and he was just this incredible musical person. You know, he played oboe and piano, and I think what I've always gathered from interviews and stuff, he was sort of the quintessential perfect English gentleman that came into the lives of the Beatles, who were, very nice lads, but having a different experience, perhaps. He was working for EMI and Parlophone, and he was looking for that next great pop group, that next great fireproof magic band. And somebody mentioned Brian Epstein's name to him, the manager of the Beatles, and it just took off from there.
And so in doing a little bit of reading on George Martin, you get the impression that he was the one who was maybe pushing the Beatles to really do more with their sound than they might otherwise have, and that he was maybe responsible for some of the things that we think of as being the most quintessential aspects of the Beatles sound. Could you maybe talk a little bit about what those things were and what role he played in the process as they were recording their albums?
When you think about his formal musical expertise and training, that's what he brought to the table that set the Beatles music kind of in a different light. Even if they've just been one exquisite pop song after another, his touches were what put the Beatles sound, you know, over there or up there. It set it apart because of the orchestrations and the arrangements. And you can think of some of the songs off the top of your head. Think about how Penny Lane sounds.
Penny Lane is in my ears and in my
Eleanor Rigby.
Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps.
Those songs that are so beautifully and fully orchestrated, Yesterday.
Oh, I believe in yesterday, suddenly.
I mean, that was just an acoustic guitar and Paul, and it's raised it to that level of what we come to know Beatles music to sound like. That was him, and they were so talented, and I think Paul especially resonated with him because Paul worked with him way past the Beatles stuff. That's how they knew they could grow together as a band with this very steady, wonderful person in their corner who helped them make the music that they heard in their heads.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Beatles evolved so much over the course of their relatively actually kind of short career.
Mm-hmm.
But what was George Martin's role in helping to sort of shape the sound that is now more associated with the Beatles' kind of psychedelic period, and as they get later into their career, where was George Martin in all of that, as far as you know?
Well, I think of Sgt. Pepper's, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band when I think of that, although Revolver, there are moments in Revolver, certainly, but Sgt. Pepper's, there's a few famous stories. One of them is being for the benefit of Mr. Kite. John had brought in a circus poster, and some of the lyrics to that song are taken directly from that poster. And they started talking about it's this benefit, it's this circus, it's this crazy psychedelic atmosphere. And they had taken some stuff that was recorded, George did, had his engineer cut all the tape up into pieces, throw them in the air, gather them back up, and tape them, you know, back in the days when you had to go ahead and make it all work that way. There was no digital. You had to get that razor blade and tape back out and put it together so it would have a more chaotic and, maybe a little off-kilter sound. That was the kind of thing he was willing to work with. And that's the moment where he's like, wow, we could make a calliope sound here. You know, so he was always willing to think. For such a straight-ahead kind of staid man, he was sure willing to get crazy with the Beatles.
So just a thought experiment. What would the Beatles have been without George Martin? How would they have sounded? How would their career have gone differently?
Well, clearly, these are talented men. You certainly are dealing with an amazing rock and roll band, and you are certainly dealing with people who wanted to keep moving to the next step. I don't think it would be some of those moments. Like as we're talking, I just keep thinking of the beginning of All You Need Is Love with the horns bursting forth. It would have been a much different band. They still would have been very, very good. But I think it's those little magical moments that you carry with you that are George Martin's brand and his way of thinking of a Beatles song.
Well, George Martin passed away earlier this month. And Vicki, thank you so much for giving us a little background on him.
Oh, fun. I always love talking about the Beatles.
That was Vicki Gregor and Jake Brownell discussing the life and work of George Martin, a.k.a. the Fifth Beatle. This is Air Check from KRCC. Stay with us.
Nothing you can do, but you can learn how to be you in time. It's easy.
KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is AirCheck, a new show about great music from the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jake Brownell, producer at KRCC.
I'm Jeff Beery, the program director and host of the Blue Plate Special.
And I'm Vicki Gregor, music director and host of the Morning Music Mix.
So Vicki, for our next segment, we have an in-studio performance, an interview with the Seattle indie pop group Hey Marseille. What can you tell us about these guys?
Hey Marseille is a band that I've been following for a number of years now. They formed back in 2006 at the University of Washington in Seattle, and they've since released three studio albums and a handful of EPs, live recordings, and some singles. Their music is often described as chamber pop, which I think refers to the fact that they incorporate these lush, orchestral sounds and arrangements into their otherwise guitar-driven rock setup. And the results are just gorgeous, really. But they were in town earlier this month to play a Saturday night show at Ivy Wild, and they made time to come by the station to play a few songs for us and to chat about what they're working on. We crammed a lot of people and a lot of instruments into our little production studio here, but we got some really incredible recordings.
Okay, well, let's take a listen to one of those songs from Hey Marseille's in-studio performance here at KRCC, and then we'll hear your interview with singer Matt Bishop and cellist Sam Anderson. So this is Eyes on You by Hey Marseille in studio here at KRCC.
This is Eyes on You.
We said it was the last time. Even when I close my eyes, you're the one I can't deny. And we move in the landslide. Watch it all turn to dust, block out the daylight. The stars out, show me what you need.
That was Hey Marseille here at the KRCC studios with Eyes on You. And I'm sitting down with members Matt Bishop and Sam Anderson.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay, so my first question to you is, you know, I know the basic background. You guys have been together since 2006 or so, coming together a couple people at a time and building out the band, Seattle, Washington, University of Washington, that kind of thing. Okay. Where does Hey Marseille come from?
When we started as a band, it was really cool to have obscure European town names. Beirut was a band that we really liked. And so we thought, let's go with something obscure, a little mysterious, that's hard to spell because that's a little indie. And that's really how we arrived at Hey Marseille. We also like rhyming. So we started with Marseille, and I said, let's just add some hay for a little pep and pizzazz.
So when I think about the instruments that are in your band, which is just some of the sweeping beauty that you hear listening to a Hey Marseille record, and thinking about cello and viola and violin and accordions and trumpets, did the band start out with that kind of idea in mind, or was it you and Nick from Hey Marseille, kind of guitar and singing, and then somebody came in with a cello, and you were like, wow, that sounds good?
Nick and I met, and I had some songs, and he had some songs, and we kind of just were recording in his basement bedroom studio where he lived with Philip, and Philip had grown up with Sam and Jacob. And so I think there was an element of arbitrariness, like, here are these sweet kind of tender songs, and let's make them sweeter and more tender by engaging these guys we know who play strings.
And that's just what Nick in particular, I think, was listening to at the time, was music that was really decked out, you know, really big arrangements. And so our early records had, you know, 100 tracks on like a single song. It was really excessive.
Really inefficient.
Yes.
So as you're coming together and writing and trying to figure out what you want to do with your songs or to flesh out a record, does everyone contribute to the actual arrangements, especially when you're bringing strings into the thing? Or do you start with this unplugged kind of guitar thing and then just build it and build it?
One of the things that was different about the latest record is that different band members were bringing song ideas to the table that were pretty much fleshed out already with the arrangements and stuff. I mean, we've always had a very maybe democratic, you might say, like, writing process, or everyone gets their opinion heard at least, or, you know, we'll try every idea. But this was much more like complete songs and complete arrangements that were brought by individual band members. So there's four writers on the record, and that's different from our previous stuff, which was more jamming and working out the arrangements, spending a lot of time working out the arrangements, and then Matt would write all the words.
How long did it take you to do your latest record, the self-titled Hey Marseille?
Including the writing process, a year. The actual recording process was really short for us, like 2 weeks, I think.
Oh,
12
wow.
days, yeah.
And that was a first for us. First time we went into a studio and gave ourselves some deadlines to force ourselves to finish the recordings in.
And that's amazing because it's bookend by a lot of traveling and touring and playing. I have to comment on this because another beautiful moment spent with your records on this latest record, your cover of Heroes.
I wish you could swim.
So, first of all, losing Mr. Bowie here this year. That was very poignant. But the other thing I wanted to speak to was that wonderful Eno Robert Fripp treatment, that riff that runs through Heroes. You touched on that in such an incredible way without recreating it exactly. There was something that you brought to referencing that with your kind of instrumentation and your take on it that I really appreciated.
Heroes is the only track we didn't record in the studio with our producer. Sam actually produced that and recorded it, and it's one of my favorites.
Oh, nice job, Sam, really.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful moment on that record, and of course, our hats and hearts to Mr. Bowie there.
Definitely. So. Yeah, every time we play it at the shows, it's like a, like for us and for the audience, you know, kind of a moment of reflection and appreciation for you know, how much he's influenced all of us. Just for one day.
Well, I really appreciate the time you have spent here talking to me. One great record after another. You're a music director's dream, you know. So thank you for sitting down with me today, and let's go out with another song of yours, West Coast.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
This is West Coast. Meet me on the West Coast in the salt air. Breathe slow. That New York City night, the first time your lips found mine, the moment everything had changed, everything had changed, everything had changed. Meet me on the West Coast, salt air, breathe slow.
That was the band Hey Marseille performing their song West Coast in studio at KRCC. You're listening to Air Check. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Aircheck, a new show about great music from the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jake Brownell, producer at KRCC.
I'm Jeff Beery, program director and host of the Blue Plate Special.
And I'm Vicki Greger, music director and host of the Morning Music Mix.
So, Jeff, our next segment comes from you, so why don't you introduce it?
Well, March is Women's History Month, so we thought we'd take the opportunity to look at the contributions that have been made by women to a genre of music that's been very long male-dominated, and that's jazz. We asked KRCC's very own Dick Fairley, host of the Thursday Night Jazz Excursion, to pick a few of the most influential women from the history of jazz and to highlight their work. It was a good conversation, very informative. Dick Fairley's a knowledgeable fellow.
All right, well, let's take a listen. This is Jeff Beery speaking with KRCC's Dick Fairley.
March is Women's History Month, and so we have tasked you, Dick Fairley, with coming up with three, four of the most influential women in jazz.
Okay, I'll be glad to do that.
So let's preface this. Are you going to do these in the order of importance, or is it chronological?
Chronological.
Okay, so we're going to go back a few years to start.
We're going to start with the 1920s.
1920s, a good year for jazz,
it
a good
was.
Decade for jazz.
It was. And so the woman I want to speak about is Lil Hardin. Lil Hardin was a pianist, and she first came to popularity as a member of King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band. She was in Chicago playing with that band when Louis Armstrong was still in New Orleans. But when King Creole sent for Louis Armstrong, he came up to Chicago, met Lil, and they married. And so she's probably best known as Louis Armstrong's wife.
Mrs. Louis Armstrong.
Mrs. Louis Armstrong.
Okay, 1920s.
She was the one that encouraged Louis to leave the band and go out on his own.
Well, so this song we're going to play, what is the name of this song?
Well, Lil was also a composer, and she composed many songs, and one of her most famous ones is Struttin' with Some Barbecue.
Okay, let's have a listen. That is wonderful. So that's big band. I'm picturing Prohibition. Absolutely. Illegal activity going on.
I'm sure.
With this music. What else can you say about this? There's no vocals. She was not a vocalist.
No, she wasn't. Well, in fact, in later years, she did do some solo piano and vocals, but she never really came to prominence as an individual performer. But she's pretty much acknowledged as the first woman in jazz who gained any recognition at all.
Wonderful. Well, that's a great choice. And so there's the 20s. Let's move on to your next choice, which is we're going chronologically.
Right.
Here. We're moving into the late 30s with this
that's
next
right.
choice.
And the next person I want to speak about is Mary Lou Williams. Mary Lou Williams was also a pianist, and in the early days of jazz, that was about the only avenue women had. There were women who played trombone and played saxophone, but it was very, very much a male-dominated, and still to some
sure.
degree is.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Is it because the piano is more legitimate? Because it has some classical background?
I think so. And I grew up in a small community, a rural community, but every home that could afford it had a piano. And so young women learning piano was acceptable, and I guess some of them learned to play ragtime. And
huh. So what can you tell us about Mary Lou Williams and her contribution to women in jazz? What direction did she take it?
I'd say Mary Lou Williams was the first woman to gain prominence in the modern era of jazz. And she was so talented and so innovative that she just couldn't be ignored. She was, in addition to being a great musician, was a teacher and mentor to many of the people who became famous, like Thelonious Monk and Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker. She
some heavy hitters.
She taught all those people a lot about jazz.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's that gives a lot of credit where it's due, I'm sure. So this song, Mary Lou Williams, that you've chosen?
She composed, I don't know, maybe hundreds of songs and recorded many, many albums. And so this is a tune of hers that she wrote called A Grand Night for Swinging.
Okay, let's have a listen. So a lot more minimalist than the stuff we heard from Lil Hardin and Louis
That's
Armstrong.
That's right. Yeah,
and I'm Dick. I'm almost hearing a little Dave Brubeck sound in there.
Well, that's right. She was the one, and you hear some of that music nowadays. You say, "Well, that's nice," but I've heard that before. But people hadn't heard that before
that was
she
the
came
late
along.
30s.
That's
40s.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
And Brubeck, his West Coast cool thing came about in the 60s,
That's
70s.
Right. That's right.
So she was way ahead of the curve.
She was, absolutely.
Mary Lou Williams, A Grand Night for Swinging. Dick, who's our next artist? We're moving chronologically into the present, getting closer to the
That's right.
The 50s now.
That's right. So Marion McPartland in World War II she's English. She met an American guy, Jimmy McPartland, a jazz musician, and they married, and they came to the U.S. in the late 40s, early 50s, and she was a well-known musician in England. One of her first gigs that brought her fame was at a club in New York City called the Hickory House. The jazz critic Leonard Feather went to hear her, and he said, "She'll never make it. She's got three strikes against her. She's English, she's white, and she's a woman."
Ah.
But, of course, she did make it
in
a very big way.
So we've got here Mary and the McPartland Trio at the Hickory House. This is 1953.
Right.
Let's have a listen.
I want to mention that that's a trio. It's Marion on piano and a guy named Bill Crow on bass. The drummer is Joe Morello, and Joe Morello left her to go to Dave Brubeck, and he's the guy that's responsible for all those unusual rhythms that the Brubeck Quartet played, Time Out, on that Time Out album, and Take Five and all those.
I first became familiar with Ms. Marion McPartland as part of a show that we used to air here on KRCC years back, Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz.
Absolutely.
And it was this wonderful show where she'd sit down with someone, a pianist, and they'd do this. I pictured them sitting side by side
That's
on
right.
a bench. Did you hear that much? Did you?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
What'd you think of that? What'd you think of that dueling piano thing?
I thought that was great. You know, she was so talented that she would call songs that those other guys couldn't keep up with.
Show them a thing or two.
And they'd call a song, and she could play it with just go right into it without any rehearsal. It was great.
It was really a wonderful show, and she was a great introduction to jazz in a lot of ways.
Yes, she was for a lot of people.
For myself included.
She did a lot for women in jazz. She mentored a number of young women. Probably the most famous is a woman named Jerry Allen, who's a professor of jazz nowadays and an avant-garde pianist. And Marion McPartland was the headliner at the first Women's Jazz Festival in the 1970s.
Oh, really? Okay, so the fourth and most contemporary artist is who?
Her name is Cecile McLaurin-Sylvant. There are nowadays, I'm glad to say, a lot of very talented women in jazz. We have women who are leaders of women's jazz orchestras who have won Grammys and Downbeat Awards. We have women who play saxophone and trumpet and violin. Cecile is a vocalist, and women vocalists, you know, there was always the girl with the band when there weren't any others. But I wanted to choose her because she's an example of contemporary jazz vocalists.
Okay, let's have a listen.
Worried in the night time, worried in the day, 'cause another woman took my man away. Down in St. Louis, there I lost my pride and joy.
Bluesy.
It is bluesy. It reminds you of Bessie Smith, St. Louis Blues, and all that very early music.
That is beautiful. So how old, you know, roughly how
she's
old is
she? She's in her early 20s.
Oh, good. So we get her for a while.
She's a rising star.
Cecile McLaurin-Sylvant.
Right.
So this was actually the only vocalist that you chose here.
That's right. And there have been so many through the years. And so I didn't want to focus exclusively on vocalists, but I didn't want to ignore the vocalists either.
That was a beautiful selection, and I'm definitely gonna pay attention to that.
I mean, lots of fun. I'm always crying the blues. Both
Dick Fairley, host of the Thursday Evening Jazz Excursion, Thursdays 8 to 11 here on KRCC. It's always a great informative show when you do this, Dick, and we're so glad to have you on staff.
Well, thanks. It's my pleasure. As I say, it's a work of love for me.
Thanks for coming in. This was a lot of fun.
Great. Thank you.
That was my conversation with Dick Fairley, talking about the history of women in jazz. For more on that subject, I really encourage you to tune into the Jazz Excursion Thursday night from 8 to 11 p.m. Dick will be dedicating the whole show to women in jazz, so don't miss it. This is Air Check from KRCC.
We're going to end our show today with a new segment that we're calling Air Check Roulette. And Jeff, this was your idea, so why don't you explain?
Well, Air Check Roulette is a little assignment that we've asked someone, doesn't really matter who, to take out their music listening device of choice, a smartphone, some sort of MP3 player, probably be best. And we've asked them to set it to shuffle. And then they'll play the first three songs that come up in their shuffle, their Air Check Roulette. And they'll tell us about those songs, defend them, explain them, sell us on these songs.
Cool. Well, Vicky, I understand that you did the honors for our very first installment of Air Check Roulette.
Yes, after my interview with Matt Bishop and Sam Anderson of the band Hey Marseille, I asked them to be our Air Check Roulette guinea pigs, and they kindly agreed. So they passed the auxiliary cable back and forth a few times and gave us a glimpse into what they've got living in their music libraries. Sam Anderson, cellist for Hey Marseille, went first.
I just hit shuffle on my iPhone here, and the song that came up is Pale Blue Eyes by Lou Reed, or Velvet Underground, rather.
Sometimes I feel so happy.
I love Lou Reed so much.
Sometimes I feel so sad.
When he died, I cried.
Oh.
Sometimes I feel so
I'm a New
happy.
York girl, so I know what you're talking about.
But mostly you just make me mad. Baby, you just make me mad.
Let's see. I don't know what will. Then I do this and press. This song by Emil Haney, Little Ballerina, which I have identified only because I like it. I actually don't know who this artist is.
I just want the chance to let that little ballerina come dance. I know it's hard to find romance when all your...
So one of the new ways that I consume music is... through the Discover playlist on Spotify. I've yielded to the power of the internet, and I don't really buy albums much anymore, but it's a really cool function that allows me to just listen to all kinds of songs like this one and think it's awesome. And now that I'm hearing it, I'm recognizing it. I'm really loving the vocal production and just the arrangements. And now that I've been called out for not actually knowing who the artist is, I'm gonna have to go buy the album once we wrap up here. But yeah, this is Little Ballerina by Emil Haney.
Started talking as if nobody else exists with the bleached blonde hair.
Okay, back to the shuffle. Ooh, Jaipal, Jasmine. I love this song. Jaipal is so mysterious. I think he's a London-based artist. There's like a record that's like been on the way for like years and years and years. It's a huge mystery. But all the stuff he's released is amazing. Let me skip forward a little bit so you can hear the vocals. This was on the Grand Theft Auto 5 soundtrack. No, hey, the GTA 5 soundtrack was cool. Like Flying Lotus, I think, put the comp together. It's really good.
This is one of my favorite songs. This is Dark Side of the Moon by Chris Staples. He's a guy that I heard this song, I think, through my local NPR affiliate. And it's one of those songs that I wish I'd written. And then I've just, like, I've been singing it for a year. A relationship of mine kind of ended because I sang it too much.
Send a man that came before me, and one day.
But it turns out he is from Seattle, and I tracked him down at a Living Room show and was like, you have written the best song right next to Taylor Swift's Blank Space of my 2015. And kind of creeped out on him and made him uncomfortable. And then he realized I was in a band too, and now we're close friends on Facebook, as all of me and my Facebook friends are. I like to send him messages. But we're actually, Sam and I are trying to do a cover of this song in our home studio. And so far, it's not as cool as this.
I wanna love you, I wanna pass it on, I wanna give and give till it's all gone. I wanna know you while we have the time, cause that's all I got to leave behind. I wanna love you.
Okay, shuffle all. Oh no, can I skip it? Okay, I'm gonna skip that one.
Ooh, no, that's the whole point. That's the whole point, Sam.
I didn't. Oh, here's Island Letter by Shuggie Otis. I love Shuggie Otis. This is off of the record Inspiration Information. I think he recorded this when he was like 19 and like played all the instruments. Ugh, this kills me.
How did you think about me at all? Or just happened to hear my call?
Excited and a little terrified. What's next? I knew this was gonna happen.
I think I've had enough.
I knew that was gonna. This is 4 or 5 seconds by Rihanna and
nice.
Kanye and Paul McCartney. We went through in making our last record really investing in pop music in a way that I haven't listened to in a while. And so I really have an appreciation. I just referenced Taylor Swift in my last explanation of the Chris Staples song. And so I've been listening to Top 40 jams for a long time. And the production on this and just the simplicity of the melody, kind of that McCartney-esque simplicity is something that resonates really, really nicely. So I'm not embarrassed at all. It's great. It's awesome.
That was Matt Bishop and Sam Anderson of the band Hey Marseille in the first installment of our new segment, Air Check Roulette. Thanks to them for being such good sports.
Hold me back, I'm about to spaz.
La 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 la.
That concludes the second episode of Air Check from KRCC. To learn more about any of the music or artists you've heard on this show, head to krcc.org. For Air Check and KRCC, I'm Jake Brownell.
I'm Vicki Gregor.
And I'm Jeff Beery.